Now, just because we are in the middle of a heat wave doesn't mean we have to spend all day outdoors appreciating the sun and burning up like I do at the very least. So we figured a nice idea and a better idea would be a nice cool room where you could sit back and relax and watch films set in a heat wave like this.
Yo, Mook! A couple of words of time. Okay. Mook!
What?
How come you got no brothers up on the wall?
Man, ask Sal, right?
Hey, Sal, how come you got no brothers up on the wall here?
You want brothers on the wall? Get your own place. You can do what you want to do. You can put your brothers and uncles and nieces and nephews, your stepfather, stepmother, whoever you want, you see? But this is my pizzeria. American Italians on the wall only.
That's Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing. Stephen Bendick has been looking at the films set in heat waves or featuring heat waves. In fact, anytime you think of that movie, you think the fire hydrants going off in the New York streets.
Yeah, I mean, I think the movie takes place over 24 hours and it depicts incredible racial tension and the rising heat in Brooklyn. And I remember seeing the movie Orla in 1989 in London. And it was sweltering that summer. And in actual fact, that the cinema was the coolest place to be with air conditioning.
In fact, I was going to say to you, cinemas hate, of course, summertime and heat waves usually because people just don't go to the movies during the kind of hot summer months. But that's different, particularly in the US, because the cinemas are the only place where you can find someplace cool in the States during the summer months.
I think one of the great things about Do the Right Thing, beyond the brilliant screenplay written by Spike Lee, he was nominated for an Academy Award, and beyond the brilliant soundtrack written by Public Enemy, the cinematography really brilliantly conjures up incredible heat. Mm. Two very, very simple techniques. They painted a lot of the sets in very, very strong, vibrant primary colours, but also they did a great trick. They placed a toaster underneath the lens of the camera, so you just simply get this shimmering heat haze coming up in front of the lens. But beyond that, Orla, it has an absolutely stunning cast. I mean, it's got John Turturro, it's got the aging cast of Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis, who are icons of African-American cinema. Mm. John Savage, who was in The Deer Hunter, people remember him mostly from The Deer Hunter. Mm. It has Samuel Jackson in a very, very early role. He's playing Senior Love Daddy, the DJ. Absolutely fantastic. He utters the brilliant opening line.
Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake. This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy, your voice of choice. The world's only 12-hour strong man on the air. Here on We Love Radio, 108 FM. The last on your dial, but first in your heart. And that's the truth, Root. Here I am. Am I here? You know it, you know. This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy doing the nasty to your ears to the nasty. Eyes only play the platters that matter, the matters they platter. And that's the Taruk Root.
From the heart of Bed-Stuy, you're listening to We Love Radio.
Doing the yin and the yang, the hip and the hop, the stupid fresh thing, the flippity flop. Oh! I have today's forecast for you. Hot!
Wake up! And it basically it's a call to everybody to wake up to the sort of the racism that's taking place in the city. And also it has a brilliant, brilliant opening credit sequence to the tune of Fight the Power by Public Enemy. And Rosie Perez dances for about 4.5 minutes. It's called Body Poppin'. Mm. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant sequence. And it's a fun, blistering film. Mm.
And to go back to the toaster under the camera lens, I take it in, that was 1989, I guess they were making it in 1988. It in 2018, we don't require a toaster under the camera lens to create the same kind of effect, or would he?
Well, I think a lot of cinematographers still like to do things in camera, which means that they would do tricks on the set as opposed to digitally. Because, you know, I think that the really, really great cinematographers, their eyes are so sharp that they can tell the difference between what is done, what is deployed digitally in post, as opposed to what was done in camera on the set. And I think a trick like that, you know, really, really, really works. Obviously, this is before CGI came into play. Yeah. But I think what it really, really captured brilliantly is also you have to do it, I think, on the set, because how are you going to digitally impose sweat onto the actors? And you can't.
Yeah. And it's interesting, as you say, the heat in the film, in the sense it adds to that sense of tension and the idea that racism is almost, you know, inflamed during hotter months. And, you know, I remember back in, say, 2011 during the London riots, and it was another particularly hot summer and they were going through a heat wave at the time. And there was lots of questions asked whether the heat was lending to, you know, what was happening on the streets, that there was that kind of sense of frustration brewing and the heat was adding to the sense of that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to sound cynical because, I mean, there's a reason why people riot. It's a reflection of social discontent. But yeah, we do note that riots really, really very rarely take place in the rain in the winter. I think the last time I remember anything like that happening in London would have been the poll tax riots. Mm. And I can't remember what year that happened, but it happened, I think, around November.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the summer and you're out and tempers get flared.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, speaking of tempers, I was reading Dog Day Afternoon, which, again, you know, most of us can picture the sweat on Al Pacino's brow. But I was reading that they made the film during the autumn and it actually happened to be quite a cold autumn when they were making it. So they really did have to work hard to make it seem like this was a Dog Day Afternoon, one of these kind of sultry, hot afternoons.
Yeah, I mean, they jump through hoops. I mean, we all think that the movie takes place during the day, and most of it does. But in actual fact, there's long stretches at night because it ends about at the airport at night. Mm. And you can remember Al Pacino's character, Sonny Wurzeck, coming out of the bank to negotiate with the police. For anyone who doesn't know it, it's based on a true story. Screenwriter Frank Pearson had come across this story printed in Life magazine about a chap called Sonny Wurzeck, who tried to rob a bank to pay for his lover's sex change operation. And the remarkable thing about watching the movie today is that, you know, we look back and we think that we look back from what we consider to be enlightened times, and we look back to the 1970s and so there's gross homophobia going on. And you would have thought that the film would have reflected that, but it didn't. Mm. It is very, very, very sympathetic and sensitive to the orientation that Sonny has, that Al Pacino's character has, and for his lover, played by Chris Sarandon. The conversation that the two of them have on the phone is really, really heartrending.
So now what? What are you going to do?
Well, I thought that I would go back to the hospital. You know, they're really nice there. I mean, they really seem like they're trying to help me.
So then that's good then, right? You found something.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I have or not.
So, are you going to still have the operation?
Yeah. Yeah.
So then, what am I supposed to say to you?
Thanks a lot. And, bon voyage.
And also you got to take into account on top of that, Sonny in real life was married. He had a wife and child, okay? Now, he also had been married, quote, married, this is before civil marriage became legal in the United States. But also then on top of that, you've got a very, 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 very tense dynamic relationship between himself and John Cazale, who was robbing the bank with him. And, you know, when they were casting the film, Sidney Lumet very famously said that when they were casting the film, the character of John Cazale should have been a lot younger. But Al Pacino said, look, just ask John Cazale to come in and read. You know, and the thing was, Al Pacino had studied acting with John Cazale. They'd been roommates, been great friends together. He was a huge admirer of Cazale's artistry. They'd worked together in The Godfather and The Godfather Part Two. And Cazale came in and completely nailed the character, despite the fact that he looked far too old for it. But I can guarantee you, if you haven't seen the movie before, and I dare anybody to defy me when I say this, you don't think he's too old for one second, because his performance is right on the money.
And Sidney Lumet, as you say, the director, also the director of 12 Angry Men, which...
That's another one.
I was going to say, which is also kind of a sweaty courtroom, isn't it? Don't they have the fans going and everyone like sweltering in the room? Yeah.
And again, that's New York based. And again, that's over a very, very tight time frame. You know, the only difference being that, I mean, with the exception of the very, very final scene, 12 Angry Men is set entirely in the one room, you know. But I think... Dog Day Afternoon is interesting for another reason, Orla, is because it doesn't have a conventional soundtrack. As far as I remember, the only music that you hear in the film is music played over the opening credits, an Elton John song. And you don't hear any other incidental music composed for the picture at all, which adds, I think, it adds in a very, very strange way to the heat of the film. I mean, if you think about Do the Right Thing, we have a great soundtrack, but that can add to it. And all you've got to do is play a song that everybody associates with the summer and you're in. But Sidney Lumet went a different way by having no music at all except for the opening credits.
Mm. I wonder, in a sense, would it be a different film if they didn't set it on this? I mean, obviously the title of the film refers to the idea of these kind of sultry dog day afternoons, these sunny, hot summer afternoons. In a sense, it would be a different film, I guess, if he didn't set it in that kind of heat.
Yeah, and I think also Frank Pearson read about it in a Life magazine article, and the article was called The Boys in the Bank.
Oh,
which
right.
which was a play on the very, very successful off-Broadway show, The Boys in the Band, which was about a group of gay men. And I think had they called it The Boys in the Bank, it would have come across as quite comedic. They would have expected a comedy coming in. And then all of a sudden you may have been laughing at the characters and the tone would have been really, really just off-key from the beginning. But I think quite tellingly, Frank Pearson won an Academy Award for best adapted screenplay for that film.
Yeah.
And I think, but you're right. But here's the thing, Orla. I think two for two so far, and you're mentioning 12 Angry Men, they're all set in New York. And there's another one that I'd like to mention, and it is The 7-Year Itch.
Didn't you just love the picture? I did. But I just felt so sorry for the creature at the end.
Sorry for the creature? Why'd you want him to marry the girl?
He was kind of scary looking, but he wasn't really all bad. I think he just craved a little affection. You know, a sense of being loved and needed and wanted.
That's a very interesting point of view.
Oh, do you feel the breeze from the subway? Isn't it delicious?
Do you know it? Of course you do. It's the one with Marilyn Monroe when they...
Standing over that subway grate with the white dress.
Yes, the billowing dress. Yeah, I mean... It is remarkable because it's one of the most iconic moments in Hollywood cinema.
Mm.
And very famously, they went down, I don't know which avenue or street that they were on, but they went for the wide shot. They shot it on location, but the air conditioning vent below didn't blow up high enough for Marilyn Monroe's dress. So they went back to the soundstage and they reconstructed just for a close-up. They reconstructed the grill and then she stood over it and they were able to blast it as much or as little as they wanted.
What about Streetcar Named Desire? Where is that? Is that New York?
No, Streetcar Named Desire is New Orleans.
Ah, New Orleans.
Because it's actually a streetcar named Desiree, if you're French. See? But there's another one. I mean, it's a great depiction, again, rendering of heat. You know, Marlon Brando plays Stanley Kowalski and Vivian Leigh plays Blanche DuBois and she comes to visit her sister. And she gets off the streetcar and it is already sweltering heat. And so she's greeted by her sister and she comes into the apartment and Stanley comes in later on. And if anybody were living anybody alive back in the early 1950s when the movie was made, Brando comes in and just tears off his T-shirt and he's dripping sweat. And it's one of those really, really iconic moments. And the brilliant exchange between the two of them here, the sexual tension is there right from the off.
Well, you're there. Teach, aren't you?
Yes.
What do you teach?
English.
Well, I never was very good English student. How long are you here for?
Well, I don't know yet.
You gonna shack up here?
I thought I would if it's not inconvenient for you all. Traveling wears me out.
Well, take it easy.
Stop!
Not those cats.
And the great thing there, you can hear it. I mean, Marlon Brando is an animal. That meow of the cat is superb. But you mentioned, I mean, it is based on a play by Tennessee Williams and another one by Tennessee Williams, Cat in Hot Tin Roof, again is set in the Deep South. This one, again, features a lot of sweaty nights and, not coincidentally, a lot of bare flesh, starring this time Paul Newman and Liz Taylor.
Oh, Brick, how long does this have to go on, this punishment? Haven't I served my term? Can't I apply for a pardon?
Lady, that finishing school voice yours sounds like you was running upstairs to tell somebody the house was on fire.
Is it any wonder? You know what I feel like? I feel all the time like a cat on a hot tin roof.
Then jump off the roof, Maggie. Jump off it. Our cats jump off roofs and they land uninjured. Do it. Jump.
Jump where? Into what?
Take a lover.
And, you know, I mean, Liz Taylor, God Lover, is completely neurotic. Paul Newman has a secret that he simply will not tell her. And that's part of the neurosis fed into by the heat.
Huh. One other, a sexy beast. Talk to me about Sexy Beast.
Sexy Beast, I'll never forget the time that I saw this. I was at a film festival in Portugal. Not quite Spain, which is where the movie takes place. But yeah. It was, again, it was absolutely blistering heat. It was, I think it was a midnight screening. So we saw it outside. The movie is about a guy called Gale Dubb, played by Ray Winston, and he's a London gangster, supposedly retired. But as we all know, gangsters never really retire. But he's gone off to the Costa del Sol with his wife, played by Amanda Redman. And it's idyllic, sun-drenched, but all to the point that it's mind-numbingly boring because they've got nothing to do, absolutely nothing to do. And then into that landscape comes the psychotic Don Logan, played by Ben Kingsley. And he would scare the life out of anybody. I mean, we've got to remember this: the casting of Kingsley is brilliantly done, because anybody who's familiar with Kingsley's career, you know, he played Gandhi, and then he played Itzhak Stern in Schindler's List, and this character is as far removed as you could get from either of those characters. So it's brilliantly done, and also a great sense of heat.
I'm just thinking of more recent ones, because last summer, well, I guess for the Oscars just gone by, but we would have seen it last year, was Call Me By Your Name. And this was set in one of these kind of beautiful long summers that the teenager is going through in France or Italy. I'm trying to remember. Italy. And it's this kind of coming of age film featuring Timothée Chalamet, for which he was Oscar nominated as well. But another lovely depiction of a summer and a kind of a teenager seen through a young teenage boy's eyes.
Yeah, and I think it's really well chosen there, Orla, because it's not particularly hot. Not hot for Italy. It would be hot maybe for us.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you also get a great sense of freedom, not only liberation, but freedom. Because my memory of that movie, quickly, Armie Hammer plays an archaeology student who comes to Italy to do a summer internship. And there he meets Elio, played by, as you say, Timothée Chalamet. And Elio's father is a professor. And then the two, Elio and Oliver, embark on a very, very intense relationship. But all my abiding memory of the film is when they go for bicycle rides. Mm. They just go off on their bikes. And that was one of my favorite times in the summer, is just get on your bike and ride and ride and ride as a kid. And it never stopped.
Yeah.
You went off to places you'd never, ever thought about seeing before. You found yourself lost, but you were too frightened or too thrilled to care.
Yeah.
And then you came back at all hours and probably got a clip in the ear by your parents saying, where the hell are you?
Yeah.
But that was one of the reasons why that movie hit home with me. It's a beautiful rendering of summer and just the joys of riding bikes, going for a bicycle ride during the day.
Yeah, it's true. And no one was checking their phone to see, you know, if someone had texted or what the latest posting on Facebook or Instagram was.
That was precisely it. There's great, great freedom about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say my other most abiding memory of the film was the peach scene. But we'll pass on swiftly from that one.
Well, can I just give you there's a very famous Irish movie called Eat the Peach, but we won't go.
No, indeed. If you haven't seen Call Me By Your Name, do see it. It's probably up on Netflix at this point. Well, you know what we're talking about when you see that scene. Stephen, go on and enjoy the heat wave. And thank you so much for bringing us the films about heat and set in heat waves and evocative of hot, long summers.
God deliver me. Oh, 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 oh. me the first time.